There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today, we actually have a special guest in the house, Mark De La Tour, our very good friend. How are you, Mark?
I'm great, Joni. It's good to be inside the Wolf's Den with you guys, finally.
Yes, finally. Thanks for joining us, Mark. You're just an awesome individual. I mean, you've helped us a ton. I just wanted to kind of give a quick bio on Mark. So Mark De La Tour graduated with a master's degree in international business management from the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He is the founder and CEO of SBD Housing Solutions, a turnkey estate investment firm based in Kansas City area. He has been investing in real estate since 2002 and has successfully flipped over 1,600 homes in the United States of America. His property management firm now manages over 650 rental homes. Mark's team will flip over 250 homes in 2021 and has growth plans in place to reach their BHAG of 1,000 homes flipped in the year by 2024. Wow, that's pretty amazing. His team is now selling assets in multiple Midwestern states with the constant commitment to excellence in remodel standards. Mark, again, thank you again for being with us today. And why don't you start off by giving us a little background about yourself?
Oh, look, I think you've done a pretty good job there. Yeah, this crazy accent hails from New Zealand. So I came over here to get my degree, my MBA at UMKC, as you mentioned, Joni, and fell in love, got married and stuck around. I kind of fell in love twice. One was with my beautiful wife, Sarah, but the other was with real estate. When I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, truly changed my life. I know that may sound like a broken record because it seems like every real estate investor starts there. But when I read that book, I knew that that was what I wanted to do. The stock market just did not appeal to me. I felt like I had no control. It didn't make much sense to me. And I felt like I could, not only accumulate wealth, but also have it spin off positive cash flow. And that's really been my life's passion since then is, really chasing real estate. And, what I see our goal now is to try and help more people do the same.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
You were also, you're being very modest because you're also a tennis star, correct? Is that?
I was a tennis. Yeah, I play more golf now than tennis. But yeah. Tennis is what brought me to America. Yes. So yeah. I came over and was lucky enough to, someone said, why did you come to America to play tennis? And I said, well, not sure if you guys know this, but the NCAA system is very unique and it's the only country in the world that actually pays athletes and with scholarships to be able to get university paid for them. So I got my undergrad and my MBA all paid for by the great state of Missouri.
Nice. So, I mean, we've seen you grow over the years and, I think mature as a business mm-hmm. and a business owner, and it's been remarkable to see what you've done. And I just reading Joni read your bio, I didn't realize you were up to that many homes already, but we're going to get into, cause I think that's remarkable to do 250 homes now and then, keep progressing every year. So what do you think over the last several years has contributed to that growth and maturity in your business and you as a leader?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for me, Sean, was just actually that humble moment when an entrepreneur realizes that you can't be the answer to every question, and surrounding yourself with more talented individuals is the best way to go. You always hear that you don't want to be the smartest guy in the room, but it's a big leap where you have to start, quite frankly, paying people much more than you're comfortable typically paying as a small mm-hmm. entrepreneur to get the better mm-hmm. talent in the room. But once you do that for the first time and you get someone extremely talented in that room that can really operate at a high level, you quickly learn that the ROI on your talent is way better than any ROI in the company. And so I think the realization and it was a hard one for me. It was really kind of a hit rock bottom and then, reach up for help. But in 2017, when I kind of hit bottom, I kind of felt just like a genius with 1,000 helpers. You know, you were just everything. I was a funnel for top-down decision-making. Every decision had to be made by Mark. The decisions were what would Mark want to do rather than what's the best thing for the company. I mean, I look back now and just think how crazy it was to be operating at a pretty high level. I mean, we're flipping 100 houses a year and really would just, you know, it was just required so much of my time and input.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the thing that's allowed me to scale and grow and not lose my mind is just putting some talented individuals around me and really trying to level up my talent base.
Hmm. Was there, did you have some like, because I, you know, Joni and I have always been very, open and willing to share, but also I can't remember the word I'm looking for right now, but you know, we share our failures, we share, you know, what works, what, where we're falling, so especially on this show, but vulnerable. Was there times where you in your business where you had to go through those, I guess, valleys, and can you share some, maybe a couple of them, where maybe that at the end, now looking back, you're like, well, now I can see why I went through that. At the time, it were horrible, but, you know, that maybe got you to where you are. Because I think a lot of times we have to learn through those valleys before we can really.
No doubt. So I had two massive, you know, impacts that kind of affected my learning curve in a deep way. Got punched in the face twice hard. The first was in 2008. And it ironically wasn't because of the downturn in the economy, but one of my business partners at the time lost his job. I had scaled my first iteration of SBD Housing using two silent business partners to kind of bankroll the operation.
Okay.
And I was the operating principal, and I had two business partners that were just the money behind it. One of them lost their job, and unfortunately they were best friends, and there's no other way to say it. They kind of conspired against me. And it was a very hostile takeover of the company where they kind of voted me off the island. So that was a really tough learning curve for me at the time when I realized that owning a third of a company, and it was a big company. We had 120 rental property at the time on top of what we were flipping every year. And that just got swept out from underneath me. Wow. Not wanting to, you know, get tied up in litigation for years, I parted ways and just started over. So mm-hmm. I think the misconception there was, okay, I'm never getting into business with anyone else. I'm just going to have to, you know, part of what makes you stronger. And this is a good takeaway for your audience because it has something that I've seen all the way through and I'll relate back to what just happened to me. But what I've realized is that the strength of the CEO or the strength of the entrepreneur will eventually become the weakness in the company. Mm-hmm. And the strength of myself was my resilience and my willingness to not give up and just mm-hmm. get stuck in and you know, turn the corner and start doing it all myself. The problem is that became a weakness of the organization because I thought that I had to be the answer to every question. Mm. So, you know, that became, you know, the weakness in our company. Similarly, you know, right now, one of the weaknesses in our company is finance mm-hmm. and not the strength of our financials, but the way that, you know, trying to scale and grow a company into multiple states, it requires much more capital than mm-hmm. what Mark can just deliver on my own. And because the strength, you know, quite frankly, is that I've always had a pretty strong personal financial statement, a good balance sheet. I've always been very bankable. But as you continue to scale and grow, I mean, you see that our projections of going from 250 in 3 years' time right. to be at 1,000 homes, Mark's going to run out of cash. <Yeah. you know? laughs> And so the strength of my operation is now becoming the weakness, and I've now got to solve for that new problem. So it's an interesting nuance because, and although those are two examples from me, I think if any entrepreneur looked at themselves clearly and they would, and the reason is very simple, that everyone's working on their weaknesses. And so when you have three or four weaknesses, you always go work on them first. And then and only then do you turn around and look at the strengths that, you know, that, mm-hmm. that become your weaknesses. And so I don't know if you guys can relate, but there is sometimes your strength can be what ends up being a weakness for the company. Sometimes it's investor relations, you know, like I was always handling investor relations. And so that was a strength of mine. It was very easy for me. But then when it came down to it and I started incorporating other people, they would say, well, where's your you know, your best standard practices and your written procedures for reaching out to owners. And I'm like, well, I just do it. Yeah. And so it's another example of if you're just doing it and you don't have written procedures and manuals and scopes of work, that's typically where you fall.
That's awesome. Cause yes, we can relate a lot to that. Cause I think we, have gone through those same scenarios. And every time we brought in a business coach, I was always the bottleneck to the entire organization, because certain key things had to come through me. And, you know, and once I let those go, it's amazing which how far things can, you know, how quickly and how, when you have the right people, like you mentioned earlier, but it can just take off and it's amazing.
Well, that was my next. Yeah. And so to pivot, that was my second. So the first one was getting punched in my face was the business divorce. Yeah. And so then I'm back up and running. The second one was when I finally just, it was too much. I mean, I was trying, we were flipping 100 homes a year and everything was on me. And although I do, as you guys both know, I pride myself on being there as a dad and a husband and father. It's important to me. I was just burning myself out because I was all things to all people.
Yeah.
And, so that's when I reached out, and my lifeline was a very good friend of mine, Chris Johns, who's come on board as my COO. Mm. And that was a massive step because now I'm like stepping back into, okay, I'm kind of having a partnership of sorts with, you know, now a really good friend of mine. And obviously our wives enjoy spending time together. And so it was a big challenge or a big opportunity for us, but at the same time, quite nerve-wracking being able to cross that threshold from friends to business partners and having him come on to the, you know, as an employee of the company. And so that has worked out very, very well. We put up some good guardrails. A big transition point for me was reading the book Rocket Fuel, part of the Traction series.
Yeah.
And you open the, it doesn't even wait for the first chapter. It says inside the dust cover, it says, if you're reading this, you're a visionary and you are the problem. I'm like, okay, I can relate. I'm a visionary.
And I appreciate that because I think what attracts to Joni and I is like humble people and people that are willing to self-examine themselves and be open about it. And we're all human. Yeah. We all make mistakes. We all, and I appreciate that about you because I think you always, you look at yourself first and where can you grow? And I appreciate that.
And you talk a lot about, you know, hanging out with higher level people, right? And that's kind of how we met you is through our mastermind and people like that, solid individuals like that to help you grow. I know we hired our COO because of you, you know, we listened to your story. And so, I mean, we collaborate together and look, we're the better turnkey providers in the U.S. So
yeah, so thank you for taking that step first. And so I have a question on that.
Mine was out of necessity. Yeah. Yours was out of choice. But no, it's essential, right? I mean, you a COO in any organization makes sure that the visionaries have some kind of traction underneath them with you know, accountability and process and automation and systems and. The accountability is a big thing. Most visionaries are not real good at accountability because they've just driven. I mean, they just drive themselves and they're surprised when others are not equally driven.
Yeah.
And so you kind of set yourself up for disappointment just thinking, hey, I work my tail off. Why are you not working your tail off?
Right.
But, you know, if they were, they would be working for themselves.
Correct. I have a question, and you can be as open as you want with this question because I know it's a little personal. I always ask questions for myself on this show as well, because I would love to know, since he was a friend and you're, because I think Joni and I struggle with this at times because you spend so much time, right, with your like COO, it becomes a friendship, but can you share some of those guardrails to keep that, I guess, safety and, you know, how did you guys come in talking about that as far as like the friendship part and the now the CEO part and, do they have to separate now or how does that work, I guess?
So ours is a unique relationship. And so for just some background, he was a friend of mine for about 8 years, 9 years before he actually joined the company. And so we were golfing buddies. He would live down in Phoenix. I'd travel down there to see him play golf together. It was so weird. We talked business, but had never even contemplated. He had never mentioned, hey, I want to work for you. I'd never said that I'm looking for someone. It was only when it was kind of interesting, you know, auction.com, it's a total pivot, came in and really disrupted my business because they started advertising and promoting all of and organizing the information on how to get information on the courthouse steps. Because if you recall, guys, for the first, you know, 15 years of my business, I was buying solely on the courthouse steps. Mm-hmm. And when auction.com, I could see in the future that this was going to be taken away from me because they were really organizing the data. Before, it was just me and like two other guys on the courthouse steps competing. Mm-hmm. Suddenly there'd be, now there's like 20 to 30 people. And so clearly that was an acquisition method that was getting taken away from me. So I knew I'd have to jump into the whole sales and marketing business, where we are now, like you know, sending out postcards and flyers and billboard campaigns and television campaigns and radio advertising, all those kind of things to try and drive the phone to ring and then get that phone to an appointment and the appointment to contract and contract to close. I mean, it's now a process. Mm-hmm. And that is not who I was as a person. So Chris, being a sales and marketing guy and managing high-powered sales teams, I knew he would be someone that I could talk to. As it progressed, I really brought him on initially as, and through my wife's wise counsel, said, hey, look, let's walk before you run. Let's make sure that he's the right fit before you go all in. And so we had him on as a consultant for about 4 or 5 months, and then permanently after that. And the guardrails we have up now, honestly, I think I would say that he respects me and I respect him. And I think it starts there. And I mean that like in all senses of the word. Like, you do not hear him. I mean, obviously, if we're on the golf course and just joking around with our buddies, you know, we can take our guard down and he'll, you know, rip me just like he would anybody else. But that does not happen in the office space and with any of our employees around. And we respect each other's position. We have a healthy, he has a healthy respect for what a visionary does, and knows that he stays in his lane and just is here to run really, really hard. But he just has a deep, the thing that we share, which I think is common, is that we both just hate to lose, like more than anything, like we want to win. And driving that at the very core, we love to win together. And the other thing that we set up as a guardrail was internally as a business, if we ever disagreed, we used the traction and rocket fuel model, which was the visionary and the COO have one vote each and they're locked. The COO actually, you know, is the breaking point. I said, look, if we're ever, you know, if it comes down to an operational, you know, tie where we're wondering what to do, then you win and you'll have my input. But I will trust in you to move forward. So being centrally aligned is important, but giving him some grace to fail, I think was important. Not hold, you know, just understanding that he wasn't a real estate guy beforehand and had to learn that. And so I gave him grace to fail and patience. But I think ultimately it just comes down to respect. You respect each other's position and try and build each other up.
That's awesome. Yeah. Have you had one of those points yet where you've had to
disagreement
surrender to him yet?
We have, honestly. You know, around hiring, you know, around budgets, advertising budgets, there's oftentimes
that's what makes it healthy, right?
I mean, look, you know, he's pushing the limits and making sure that he knows that we have to hit big goals. I mean, you don't get to 1,000 homes a year by not spending advertising dollars. And so you know, we very clearly have some big goals set ahead of us. You know, those, gosh, you know, the Memphis Invest guys and REI Nation are just crushing right now. They just hit 7,000 homes under management. They're doing some great things. And, you know, they're kind of a flagship of what, you know, turnkey providers can do. And we certainly look to them as a shining star of someone that we would, you know, try and surpass one day.
Absolutely. Well, now talking a little bit about that, I know you're in several different markets. How do you do that? You know, working remotely, rehabbing properties and growing your property management side.
Well, that's one thing, Joni, that is very unique is as a turnkey provider, you've got to do two things. You've got to, well, four things, right? You've got to acquire, you've got to rehab, you've got to property manage, and then obviously sell. And so, you know, acquisitions in multiple markets, I'm sure you guys can understand, as long as you, you know, have good, you know, answer the phone and set appointments and that kind of thing, you can do it remotely. The biggest challenge for us was the rehab component. How do you rehab in another city and maintain the quality and control?
Right.
And that's what we have, you know, fixed for. I think in Kansas City, there's like in most metros, I'm sure you guys feel the same way in Houston, is there's a limit to how many deals you think are available in that metro market. I don't think we could scale from doing 250 to 1,000 in Kansas City without really compressing margin. And we want to scale the volume number. As you know, in business, you've got volume and margin and you can move both. We did not want to just reduce margin to increase volume. We wanted to increase volume and not reduce margin. So for us, we're looking at a business model and realizing, okay, how can we do that? And I thought the easiest way was to just go into multiple markets. And so we looked at the rehab model really, really hard. We got our written scopes of work. If anyone's interested in our procedures, we actually have them on openly on our website. It's sbdcontractor.com. Anyone can just go there and pull down exactly the SKUs, the codes, the pictures of our houses, of what everything should look like. So if in doubt, they go to this webpage and every contractor knows exactly what they should be rehabbing a house at. So literally with the links to Lowe's lighting and Home Depot's lighting and all of that stuff.
Wow.
So we got really, really dialed in on the what we wanted it to look like. And then it came down to the who was going to do it. In Kansas City, we have two models. We have one model that is we have general contractors that only work for us that are out there, you know, rehabbing. Mm-hmm. And those guys, they know our product. They've worked with us for years and they're really, really good at what they do. But you can't, that was really, really hard model to scale. Even inside Kansas City, going from 100 homes to 250, it was hard to scale the model of having enough GCs that would just effectively be like a builder contractor. They would run the entire job. They would pull in the subcontractors because then you just have a list of preferred subcontractors and GC was responsible for running the entire job. Mm-hmm. We outsourced. So the way that we were able to scale was using nationwide remodeling companies, which obviously you pay a premium for.
Right.
But outsourcing effectively to, or onboarding them to our way of doing things, mm-hmm. but outsourcing. So we just say, hey, give us a bid. They give us a bid, like an all-inclusive bid, and then everything's done. Mm-hmm. And so those, we have three companies now that are able to do that for us on large scale. And then we've been kind of picking our markets, obviously, where those guys are located. Gotcha. So we are now down in Montgomery, Alabama, and about to move into Huntsville, Alabama, for that reason, that we have a really good Alabama rehab crews down there, and they're ready to go. And then it's just a matter of turning on the advertising and marketing and driving that. Then we go in on the PM side and do a JV PM agreement where we control all of the owner communication, but as far as the boots on the ground, that's done at the local level. So mm-hmm. that's kind of a glimpse into it. And that's how we've been able to scale into multiple markets, is not trying to go and hire crews in those places and have employees in those places.
Yeah, that makes sense. That was my next question. How?
Well, it's kind of the, you know what, David Phelps is one of my mentors and a dear friend of mine, and he's always preaching.
And a guest of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go. And who, not how, right? It's like, it's not how you can get something done, but who can help you get that thing done. And so for us, it was all about getting the right partner and collaboration versus competition.
And the simplistic or the beautiful part about all that, you kept it really simple.
Yeah.
You didn't try to overcomplicate it with employees and setting up entire operations and, that's awesome. And do you feel, is there, like, you're paying a premium for the contracting, is there, it's still within your budgets? And then how do you control them a little bit? How do you manage them to make sure that they're running a solid business and meeting their measurables and all that as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, Sean, you know the answer to that question as a great business owner that you are, but it's all about, in any business, it's all about meetings, and a cadence of meetings and accountability and mm-hmm. and process. So it's, the process is Build-A-Trend. We use Build-A-Trend to, they're required to upload photos and pictures so they can see exactly what's going on. They have to meet certain milestones, A, so that we can see what's going on, and B, so we can get our construction draws from the banks. And then we have weekly meetings. Like, they are in our office with our director of construction, you know, on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. The one guy that's the Kansas City representative of their companies, they come in and literally talk with us. And if that's not a local guy, we have Zoom meetings. So, I mean, technology is a beautiful thing where you really there's no excuses for not having in-person, even just face-to-face like you and I are today, right?
Right. Correct.
No reason for me to fly down to Houston, although I'd love to go to game six
on tomorrow night.
Go Astros.
Go Astros. But there's no reason for not having that same level of accountability. So, yeah, it's just a matter of just communication. Gosh, just talk to people, right? Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to.
It comes down to good communication.
Yeah. How are you selecting your market? Is it just based upon them, or are you looking at all of it? Like, first, where you have the crews? So
That's one component. I would say it's kind of four things. Mm-hmm. One is where our rehab crew's going. Two, where there is, you know, demographics. Obviously, really strong demographics. Mm-hmm. And then the third would be economic feat. You know, do we think that the city is going to grow at a rate that would be sustainable for, you know, 20, 30 years? Keep in mind that I think our philosophy is the same as yours, where we're looking at buying and holding. So it's not so much, can we go get a smoking home run deal today for our investor? It's mm-hmm. more, will this property cash flow? And over time, will it double in value in 20 years time? Mm-hmm. And in those markets, it's kind of where we hit it. So for us, it's certainly that tranche along the Midwest. You know, just those good Midwestern towns, kind of the mid, I would call the mid-major markets, you know, no Atlanta, Houston, New York, or LA. Those are off the market for us. We're looking at Kansas City, Omaha, Nebraska, you know, Huntsville and Montgomery, Alabama, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Northwest Arkansas, Springfield, Missouri, you know, Wichita, nice. Kansas. Yeah. Those kind of just good Midwestern towns that will, we feel like if you've read a book called Fate of the States, it's a really interesting read that talks about the drain from California, Washington, and Oregon into Texas and the Midwest, and then from New York and New Jersey down into Florida and the Southeast. And so, you know, there's clearly a drain from the blue states to red. And, you know, we are just banking on the population base increasing and still looking for a quality housing. And that coupled with obviously the major movement from, you know, do you own your own home to, you know, people that are content renting their home and investing the difference, you know, we feel that we're in a good place to capitalize on that.
How many markets do you feel you have to be in to hit 1,000? Do you guys have that number or projection?
Yeah, so we have, we have, it's 12, but that's overkill. I think by 10, we will be at 1,000 a year. Because I think, you know, we were looking at the model and looking at, and we have it all on a spreadsheet, as you can imagine, but yeah, we're looking at like, okay, how hard would it be to go from in Kansas City from 200 to 300? And we're like, man, that's, you know, we'd have to compromise margin and, and maybe drop and do this and that and do some more things. For us to go from zero to 50 in two other markets, probably not a big deal. We can go buy five houses a month. I mean, we're buying 25 houses a month right now. For us to buy five in any market, that's just with wholesale relationships. You know, we can go in with a bunch of wholesalers and say, hey, let us be your designated buyer and we'd love to. So actually, shout out to any of the wholesalers working in some of those markets. Please reach out. You know, we hired wholesalers and, you know, actually we're proud to say we actually paid out over $1 million in wholesale fees last year, Sean. Which is not, some people see that as a big line item. I see that as an awesome way to work together and collaborate with other people that are taking the time to become really good at real estate.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. And talking about capital to finance these deals, are so, you know, are you looking for private lenders? How do you finance your deals?
Yeah, so twofold. One is we've always been strong with local banks and we continue to be. Shout out to Encore Bank. They're a really progressive, fast and up and coming bank in the Northwest Arkansas area that's kind of going into a lot of these minor markets. So we're really excited about starting a banking relationship with them. Community America Credit Union in Kansas City has been wonderful. And these are lenders that give us basically across the board 4% construction loans up to 80% LTV. Now, having said that, there's still some money down out of our pocket. We measure something in our business called CTU, which is effectively just cash tied up in the organization. And we're running around 30,000 cash tied up for every house we buy. And so to float that, we do, we have started a fund. And so private equity fund that's kind of helping us, you know, grow and scale into these other markets. You know, again, that was one where I was financing all that myself, but as we have scaled into these other markets, we've needed to go private equity. And so we offer an 8% fund where private investors can just invest in our fund and get a solid 8% return.
Sweet.
Very cool.
I always ask since, you know, we're, it's been such a like question mark and, there's been a lot of unknowns the last 18 months. And so with you taking this aggressive approach into multiple markets, growing and scaling, I would love your opinion on where do you think things are headed in the next couple of years? I know you're not, you don't have a crystal ball.
If Mark had a crystal ball.
Yeah, that's kind of my business, right? As CEO, right? You've got to be looking and listening and reading and analyzing. You know, I'm bullish on real estate. So I believe that the next 18 months, you know, you can still flip. As you know, for the listeners out there, you know, you guys know, for the listeners out there, we operate in twofold. About 70% of what we do is buy, rehab, get it rented out, and sell as a full turnkey rental. We also have 30% of our portfolio that we actually flip, meaning on the MLS, on the open market. Pretty much anything 200,000 and below will full turnkey. Anything, you know, in that kind of 300 to 700 range, we flip. So we do have a good pulse on what's happening, days on market and those kind of indicators that we're looking at on the flip inventory all the time. And I still am very bullish that 2022 will be a very good year for flipping real estate. Mm-hmm. Because we're eyes wide open. Our full turnkey model is very regimented, and it's really not cyclical at all. I believe that just in the downturn, you just get slightly better margins and better returns, but you can still buy, rehab, and sell to an investor that's wanting to build a portfolio. Mm-hmm. But I clearly am aware that it's purely flipping is speculation. And so we're well aware that we don't want to put too much cadence or too much into this flipping inventory, which is why we only do, around 60 or 70 flips a year. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I'm very aware of the iBuyers, right, and what they're doing. You saw Zillow is probably hot and heavy, OfferPad, Zillow Offers, and mm-hmm. all these companies that are coming in and buying. So you've got the iBuyer impact. You've also got the hedge funds that are coming in. So we're actively working with a bunch of those hedge funds, and I would encourage people out there that are scared of them to just do more due diligence. Mm-hmm. I think that these guys are here to stay. I think they value single-family real estate, and they can be a good buyer for you. So anyone that's in real estate should be finding out a way, not how do I compete with them, but right. how do I collaborate with them? How do I work with them? Mm-hmm. Know their buy box. What are they looking mm-hmm. for? And be a supplier to them, because they are a unlimited source of, of capital.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that, Cliff Notes, I'm not giving you any specifics, but I'm a believer that 18 months of real estate we still have on a bull run. And then after that, there has to be a correction. Mm-hmm. We're thinking that 2024, probably in line with the election, will be a down year in the economy. I know that typically the election years are not massive swings, but I do believe that either just before or just after that election will be a big downturn in the stock market. But we are just positioning ourselves to take advantage of that, mm-hmm. because if real estate is affected, which again, I don't see it being majorly affected, but if it is affected, we will be there to just capitalize on it and sell even more assets to our investor base.
Have you got into development or building yet? Or
yeah, so we're not as much as you guys, but we are breaking teeth on that. We've bought about 20 fourplex lots. So we're going to be building about 80, next year 80 units will come out of the ground. We're doing 20 fourplexes. Mm-hmm. Excited to roll that out. We've partnered with a builder and got permits. And so I think in the next 30 days, we'll be breaking ground and rolling them out to our investor base. So yeah, we're excited awesome. About that. But we chose not to do single family, but just go straight to those fourplexes.
Yeah. And they'll move so quickly. Oh, yeah. And I think you'll find out you'll love it. But, with some that I don't think I'll go back to flipping, to be honest with you. I mean, when the market corrects and all that, I probably will, because the margins will be there. But we've really enjoyed new mm-hmm. construction. So I'm just curious, as you've grown, and because this is something that Joni and I have gone through over the last several years, is you're on this massive projection growth and you're killing it. When is enough enough? What's your next?
Our good friend Dave Phillips, your next?
Yeah, so really good question, and actually one that I got challenged recently. So I've got a CEO coach named Daniel Marcos.
Yes.
So I think you guys know.
Yeah, we know
yes.
him very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Daniel's really been challenging me. Mark, I know you like to win, but why? 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 And so I don't have a specific response to that, other than I am passionate about giving people the option of investing in real estate. Mm. I believe that the real estate industry for the longest time has done a very poor job of catering to the high income, high net worth individual that wants to get into real estate. Mm-hmm. And I don't think turnkey should be the only thing. So we're not limiting ourselves to just being a turnkey provider. So when you ask, what's my next? We want to give high income, high net worth individuals an avenue to divest from the stock market and invest in real estate in a safe and secure manner. And that's what we're offering. So we have kind of a four-pronged approach. One is obviously single family turnkeys. Mm-hmm. The second is new construction. To your point, that will be a move for us constantly moving forward, is giving them some new construction. The third is multifamily syndications. We are starting to do multifamily syndications. We've done three. We intend to do now two or three per year, which will give our investor base, which is obviously, clamoring for the mm-hmm. deployment of capital, we'll be able to give them an opportunity to deploy that capital into qualified investments. And then lastly, obviously the security of just a real estate backed fund, mm-hmm. which is our 8% fund. So, I believe that the stock market is frothy. And I think that there will be a correction coming sooner rather than later. And so we just want to be there to help people divest. And I want to scream from the top of my lungs because, yeah, although they call this asset class alternative investments, I kind of hate that term because it's like, yeah, we're not an alternative. We are the thing that we should be doing. The stock market's the alternative. But unfortunately, everyone is indoctrinated from the very first day they step on a job site. What is the thing you fill out on paperwork, right? Okay, we'll do a company match of 3% if you put your money in the stock market. It's like they're coaching you right from the get-go that that's the way to wealth and retirement. And I just want to buck that trend, guys. I'm passionate about telling people that there's a better way. And I think we don't have to beat our heads against the wall. You will see me with more strategic alliances and more partnerships and, you know, working with and through the collaboration of other, you know, really talented individuals rather than us beating our head against the wall in rehab. When I say we are going to 1,000 homes a year, we don't necessarily have to rehab 1,000 homes a year. Mm-hmm. I would love to be the deal provider where other people are rehabbing, they meet our certain criteria, and then we can just be the sales and dispositions arm for that entity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's big goals ahead. But yeah, well, I'm excited. I'm still passionate about it. I've kind of got a 5-year runway before I see myself doing anything. You know, the kids can be in college before I want to start traveling or going around and doing a whole bunch of my next. But in the meantime, I'm here to beat the drum that the stock market is gambling and speculative, and real estate is about the safest security out there. So, you know, let's get into that safe real estate investment vehicle.
Yeah. Well, as you can see, Mark knows his stuff and he's passionate about real estate. I'm excited of where you're headed, Mark. You've truly been an inspiration to a lot of us. So thank you so much for sharing with our listeners today. Any last minute thoughts, advice?
Can you share how people can get involved with you, whether either on that 4-prong approach or, you know, just how they can reach out and research you more?
Yeah, sure. So I appreciate that. I do have a podcast, Mistake-Free Real Estate Podcast, and we're trying to get those likes and subscriptions just like anybody. So if you want to jump and start there, you can absorb some more of my content. And then I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn, pretty much accept all those that want to kind of jump on and follow. So again, Mark Delator is my Instagram, at Mark Delator. And then, LinkedIn and Facebook. Happy to begin building that audience. I feel like now I'm finding my stride and it's kind of that next, you know, guys, it's like, you know, Chris is really running the business, right? Operationally doing great. It's kind of giving me time to think. I'm reading right now a great book, which I would highly recommend for any business owner, called The Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham.
It's one of the best. I think it's the best business book out there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. How have I not been referred this book sooner? Yeah. I'm kicking myself. But at the end of every chapter, do you remember what he says at the end of every chapter, Sean?
Stupid.
I shouldn't have put you on the spot.
Yeah.
So at the end of every chapter, he says, now go think.
Now go think. Now go think. What was the thing that he says about something? Well, that was stupid or something.
And I think that the key thing he's trying to get across is that it's easier to do than to think.
Yeah.
And thinking is really, really hard. And it takes time and quiet.
Yeah,
and
it really
quiet
does.
Quiet yourself from the noise and start thinking about your next is really important. And so my clarity of thought and clarity of vision is purely because Chris has stepped up in his COO role and allowed me that time, you know, to go think. And it's been a big part of our success recently is just him running the company and me being able to take some time to breathe and think about where we're going to go and take our next.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Mark, for joining us today inside the Wolf's Den.
Appreciate it, guys.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.